You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12s. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Joining me for the Wednesday show, as always, Rob Rang. Today's episode brought your way by Built Bar. Go to builtbar.com and use promo code Locked On, and you'll get $10 off your next order. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. What's old is new, apparently, in Seattle, at least when it comes to free agent visits. During the middle of today's mock game, Rob, you and I were both there in attendance watching the game. Two reports surfaced, one coming from Mike Garofalo of NFL Network, the other from Field Yates of ESPN, indicating the Seahawks had brought in former receiver Paul Richardson as well as center Justin Britt for visits and workouts. And Coach Pete Carroll, after the game, was asked about it, and he said that they are taking a close look at both players. They're coming off injuries, so they need to see where each of them is at. We know that Justin Britt tore his ACL midway through the season last year. They cut him in April as a cap casualty, and at the time, there was an injury designation on it. He was not healthy, but here we are now. It's been 4 months since they made that move, and I'm assuming now that we're closing in on a year since that injury that Justin Britt is probably close to being ready to play, if not able to suit up right now. And let's just start with that center position first, because there's been a competition ongoing. At least that's what Pete Carroll is saying. You and I are not allowed to dive into how many reps were dished out for certain players and whatnot, but it really has not felt to me like a competition. You know, when I watch the receiver position and I see Freddie Swain against John Ursua, that has felt like a competition to me. At the running back position, DJ Dallas against Travis Homer, that has felt like a competition to me. But the center position, I have not gotten that vibe at all in training camp. It just seemed very evident to me that BJ Finney has not been in the mix. And Pete Carroll is not saying it that way, but you can read between the tea leaves. And if you've been at the practice, it just doesn't seem like they have been happy at all with what they've gotten from him to this point. And now that they brought Britt back in for a visit, that is another indicator that they are not pleased with their center situation.
Well, I think that they're probably not pleased with their center situation. At the same time, I think they also realize Justin Britt's one heck of a football player and very much a team leader as well. And I think that has not been forgotten over these last couple of months. If he is indeed healthy, then he is going to be an upgrade, just talent, size, strength, and experience than some of the other guys who are competing for that backup center position. Because I don't think that it should just be assumed that Justin Britt would be able to come in here and wrestle away that starting role from Ethan Postick, because I don't think we're breaking news here when we've been saying that Ethan Postick has been lining up with the ones, and he did so in this game as well. And I thought that he did a nice job. Finney has not been as good as hoped. He did play some guard as well. And so I think that positional versatility gives him a little bit of an advantage. And Pete Carroll talked about it in the post-game press conference, about the fact that Postick has been here for a few years and has that familiarity, and that gave him an immediate advantage. But to your greater point, Corbin, I think that it's given that Finney played as well as he did for Pittsburgh and in his brief starting experience, that Seattle did, obviously sign him as an undrafted sign him in free agency while also allowing Joey Hunt releasing Joey Hunt. Then clearly it looked like the Seahawks were expecting that Finney was going to be able to come in and compete for the starting job. But, I think this is more about kicking the tires on some players that you already know how they fit into your team. And I don't just mean X's and O's. I mean in the locker room. And I would not be surprised to see Seattle bring back either one of those two players, Justin Britt or Paul Richardson. Both of them are positions that I think are better than I thought based on just watching them. Seattle is actually a little bit better at receiver and center than I thought they might be. But that's because the young players have stepped up, especially at the receiver position. And I'm curious to see, if any of these other centers, like, say, a Kyle Fuller, for example, if he's able to kind of step his way up. Although, to be honest with you, I thought that he didn't play as well during the game itself as I would have liked to see as well.
And I think that's where we get back to that bottom line, where right now, whether they would want to admit it or not, they might be very pleased with where Ethan Postick is at right now. But Fuller's going to be suspended the first two games of the season, so you can't count on him to be your guy anyway. And then you've got BJ Finney, who's just struggled. And from what I've been told, one of the big issues has just been trying to grasp the playbook, and it's really difficult to do that as a center. You have all the line calls and stuff. So without having a normal offseason, that's understandable. If that's really what the biggest issue has been, then it's just unfortunate. You know, you gave him a two-year, $8 million deal. You were hoping that that was going to be your guy at the center position. I liked what I saw in film from him, but as you and I have talked about, he is not a road grader in the run game, and that's typically what the Seahawks are looking for from their interior linemen, especially since Mike Solari got there. So I would not be surprised at all. In fact, these two guys, I think it makes the most sense to bring back Britt. If he's healthy, you're going to get him at a cheaper cost. You had to release him partially because he had a cap hit that was north of $10 million this year, and they were trying to open up room so they had some financial flexibility on their roster. But he's a guy that until last year had been a very reliable, durable starter. He's still only 28 years old. So why not bring him back into the fold? And of course, his health is going to be the big thing. Is he recovered from that injury enough that he can come in and play? As for Richardson, this is one that you and I actually kicked the tires on way back in March. There were some rumors out there circulating Seattle might look at him. At that point, after the Redskins released him, of course, typically players like that are coming off injuries, have a much harder time finding jobs. And then you add in the pandemic, there are a lot of players that have been coming off injuries that are still out there available to sign. And I think this just goes back to more than Josh Gordon. And there's a lot of rumors out there that, you know, maybe he's not going to be reinstated and whatnot. We don't know. But I think this is more about the injury situation for the Seahawks at the receiver position right now. Philip Dorsett missed another practice today with a sore foot, and Pete Carroll acknowledged, while it's not super serious, this has been something that he's been dealing with for a while. So they're going to probably have to manage that injury. You never like to hear that in a press conference, that this is an injury we're going to have to maybe manage for some time. And then, of course, John Ursua missed today with a hamstring tweak. Sounds like he could be back pretty quickly, maybe even after tomorrow's off day. And Cody Thompson's been out for almost a week after really having a strong start to camp. So right now they're hurting a little bit body-wise at that position. And obviously Russell Wilson has plenty of chemistry with Paul Richardson. The last year he was in Seattle, had a career high over 700 receiving yards. When he's been healthy and he was able to get into the lineup there, he played well for the Seahawks, and he's only 28 years old. So I guess that's my big thing. Yes, they're coming off injuries, but these are still two players that are relatively young that know the system. And so I would not be surprised at all, particularly with Justin Britt, if they decide to make a move and bring back one or both these guys here in the near future. It's not like normal where they can just sign them and they can practice tomorrow, though. They got to go through COVID-19 testing. And then after they pass three of those in 4 days, then they can have a physical and sign with the team. So this is something I don't expect to hear an update on for a few days.
Well, I would agree with you in that regard. But again, I think that because there is some familiarity with both these players, that I think that it would be relatively easy to get that done, assuming, of course, that they are medically cleared, not only with their prior injuries, but obviously with the pandemic. And that's one of the things, too, I want to make sure that I mention about Paul Richardson and just how good of a replacement that he would be for Philip Dorsett as that speed threat. You know, you and me, I'm the draft guy. I'm the guy who focuses in on these things, but you know, maybe some of our listeners don't remember what a speed demon that Paul Richardson was. He also ran a 4.33 second 40-yard dash as an absolute playmaker for Colorado. And what I liked about him and what I liked about Philip Dorsett as well is while they both have that elite straight line speed, they're also pretty savvy route runners. And one of the things I remember about Paul Richardson in his time with Russell Wilson, as you mentioned, that shared that year together, was the body control. I mean, Paul Richardson wound up showing a much better body control and toughness, being able to high point passes than you'd ever give a guy normally credit for when he's built the way that Paul Richardson is, which is 6 foot, roughly 175 pounds, soaking wet. And so usually guys like that are not tough guys. And yet Paul Richardson and certainly Justin Britt are that. And that's why I think the Seahawks would love to bring back either or both of those players to the roster.
We'll see what happens. I am under the presumption that Richardson and maybe Britt is in the same ballpark here, where they both have already started their COVID-19 testing. You might have by Friday or Saturday one or both those guys signing. We'll just have to see. Again, as Pete Carroll said, it's all about health. They've got to see where these guys are at since they both ended last season on injured reserve. When we come back for the second quarter, there was a box scrimmage today. All that news about incoming visits kind of took things away from that a little bit. But it was today's game actually went four quarters and a lot of really good football for us to get some takeaways from. So we're going to go to the defensive side of the football, some observations from CenturyLink Field. When we come back, you're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
As an avid weightlifter and distance runner, I'm always looking for an edge when it comes to nutrition, seeking delicious, healthy protein bars without the crazy additives. Since being diagnosed with celiac disease, my options have been pretty limited. Until now. Enter in the Built Bar, a low-calorie, low-sugar, high-protein, gluten-free protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. Built Bar now comes in 18 mouth-watering flavors, including 6 new delicious flavors such as caramel brownie and cookies and cream. My all-time favorite is peanut butter brownie, which is 20 grams of protein, just 3 grams of sugar, and 3 grams of net carbs. Since I had my first Built Bar, I never go without one when I hit the weight room or go for a jog. All Built Bars are 100% chocolate, nut and gluten-free, soft and easy to chew, and don't have the nasty aftertaste of competing protein bars. Sound too good to be true? Go to BuiltBar.com and build your own custom box with your choice of flavors using the code LOCKEDON for $10 off. You will also receive a free cooler with your first purchase while supplies last. So what are you waiting for? Change your workout game by going to BuiltBar.com and entering code LOCKEDON for $10 off.
Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, along with my good friend, Rob Rang. Happy Wednesday to all of our listeners. Today, the Seahawks had their second mock scrimmage at CenturyLink Field. Saturday's first one, they only played two of the four quarters because Brandon Jackson got hurt, was taken off on a backboard, and then put into an ambulance, and he was taken to the hospital. They had to cancel the last couple quarters. Pete Carroll decided it wasn't worth getting everybody started back up out of respect for Jackson. But they were able to get all four quarters in today. And while there were a lot of really good plays on offense, I think it would be remiss not to mention the fact, Rob, that when the first team defense was together, for the most part, did not give any points up today in the mock scrimmage.
Yeah, that was one of the exciting things about it is the fact that they did play as well as they did, that they were able to force some turnovers. One of the players that we're going to be talking about a lot is going to be Marquise Blair, who had two interceptions throughout this mock game, and both of them were impressive plays. So that's what's exciting. Sometimes you see plays where, a guy basically just kind of, it's can of corn out there. I mean, in the first one, it was a quick reaction off of a pass deflection. And then the other one was a little bit easier throw, but at the same time, he read it beautifully. He read the exact route and would put himself in position to make that interception. So very exciting. Marquise Blair also had a couple of times where he had some big pops up at the line of scrimmage, playing a little bit closer in run support as well. To me, that was one of the exciting things, but overall, it was the team speed that really jumped out to me. And one of the things that we've been kind of harping about, that it makes this 2020 version of the Seahawks so much more exciting, has so much more potential, at least in my opinion, on the defensive side of the ball than the unit we saw last year in 2019.
Pete Carroll and Ken Norton Jr. are going to have a blast trying to figure out how to mix and match the players that they've got out there, because last year they played so much base defense. And then this year you go out, you get Bruce Irvin, you bring him back into the fold. He's been playing Sam linebacker. You draft Jordan Brooks in the first round. You've still got Bobby Wagner and KJ Wright. So you would think they have one of the most talented linebacker groups in the entire league, that they're going to still be playing a lot of base. But now you have Jamal Adams, who sat out today with dealing with a finger issue. Apparently he cut his finger while he was trying to cut strawberries. I believe that's what Pete Carroll said was going on, but had some stitches. He's going to be fine. They just decided to sit him out today, but that meant Marquise Blair got a lot more opportunities. But just the idea that you can get all three of those players on the field, if Marquise Blair is playing the way that he has over the last week, this was not a one-day thing. He has been killing it at practice. A few practices ago, he had a sack on one play and then got a pass defense the next one in the red zone. So he has just been playing at a really high level, whether he's been playing strong safety, nickel corner, you name it, he has been playing extremely well. And I even asked Shaquille Griffin about it today. You know, what's the biggest difference with him right now? And he immediately said, look, it's all about his comfort level right now. And it's clearly evident to me he is playing faster. He is not thinking very much out there right now. He's just reacting and playing football. And we know with the mindset that he has, if he's playing full speed, that this guy can be a hell of a ball player. So we've been kind of, you know, discounting where he's going to fit in now. But if you're going to have him playing at this kind of level with the other two safeties they've already got and the other talent at linebacker, the potential for this defense, as fast as it is, the potential is up there for this to be a top five unit. I truly believe that.
Oh, I do too. I do too. And we've talked about this, you know, lots of times that, you know, I think for a lot of people, they believe that you have to win up front on the defensive line. And I think that that has been the case for a long time. And I think that the NFL in the last year or two is really starting to shift out of that. And it's a game now played in space. It's played at the second level. And so when you have speed at linebacker and defensive back, or as you mentioned with Marquise Blair, wherever they line him up, nickel, strong safety, whatever, he has the speed, he has the length, and he certainly has the physicality. I mean, you know, Seahawks fans saw it last year. I mean, we saw some mistakes by the rookie, but we also saw some of the big time plays that he was able to make for the Seahawks last year. Well, it's just you're seeing even more of those big plays this year. So I'm really excited to see what Seattle does with Blair, how they fit him in, and what a fun problem to have when you just almost have too much speed at the linebacker position, at the defensive back position. To me, one of the real genius things the Seahawks are doing here is they're basically it's allowing them to be able to kind of mix and match depending on their opponent that week. And I just think that when you have as varied of offenses as you have in the NFC West division, then that is the way to attack it. Sure, if you had just four first round picks, you can line up along the defensive line and go after the quarterback or whatever, that would be great. But Seattle didn't have that. And so they basically tried to, change their defense the best way that they could. And I think the dividends are going to be paid off immediately. I think we're going to see that playmaking ability. And, you know, what we saw, or at least you and I saw with our own eyes just a couple hours ago.
This defense just has so much more flexibility than it had last year. And I can make an argument this is the most flexibility that they've had on that side of the ball, really, since the Legion of Boom was still roaming back there pre-2017 when they got hit with all those injuries that year. You lost Cam Chancellor. You lost Richard Sherman. I think this is the most flexible defense they've had when you consider the depth and the speed they have at linebacker and the fact that right now Marquise Blair is probably your third best safety. Like you said, it's a really good problem to have, and they're going to be able to mix and match with different opponents. And I think from a game planning standpoint, Pete Carroll and Ken Norton Jr. have to be salivating, because this is a like you said, it's a really good problem as a coach to have when you're like, look, I can play this defense against the 49ers, and then when we're playing a team like the Rams, I can mix and match here. I can put these guys in. When you're able to do that, it just takes a load off the defensive coordinator, and it allows you to be much more creative with how you deploy your players. So I think Marquise Blair, the way he's playing right now, it opens up a lot of opportunities. It opens up a lot of possibilities for this defense moving forward week by week with all the other talent they've got on the roster. A few other guys that jumped out to me today, I thought Puna Ford in the interior, we've talked a lot about him as a run defender. I mentioned earlier in the offseason, I think that this is the year we start to see Puna come in and be just a little bit more of a nuisance as a pass rusher. And I'm not saying he's going to go out and get 9 or 10 sacks, because that is not his game, but I could see him being much more disruptive, getting after the quarterback, collapsing the pocket. And we saw that a few times today where he was able to collapse the pocket, get back there, blow up the blocker into the quarterback. And obviously right now you can't tackle the QB in these practices, but he was able to get back there several times. So I was very encouraged by that. I saw a few splashy plays from Rasheem Green as well. And that goes to what we've seen throughout training camp. He's had a really good camp entering year three, and he looks like he is going to be the starter there at that five tech position. So I think, you know, it's tough in these games when quarterbacks are getting the football out really quick. You can't go hit them and stuff like that. It's really difficult to evaluate pass rushers, but I thought those two guys stood out above the rest today.
Yeah, certainly for me, Rasheem Green is the one that jumped out. I mean, just he just looks like a different guy than he did these first couple of years. Just physically, he's walking around with kind of an alpha dog, kind of a chip on his shoulder kind of a thing. I mean, he just, like I said, looks like a completely different player. The types of plays that he's making are really exciting. I mean, this the very first snap of the game. I mean, he did a nice bull rush and was able to kind of put a lot of pressure on the quarterback and basically blow up the play. I mean, deflect the pass at the line of scrimmage. So it was just, it's that type of versatility that Green provides. And you're absolutely right about Puna Ford. I mean, he's just, he's just so slippery inside, so powerful. So I think that tandem was very impressive. I was hoping to see a little bit more juice from the outside pass rushers. But I am intrigued by what Alton Robinson is showing, and certainly Benson Mayoa and Bruce Irvin as well. You just see the veterans, but I know we're going to be talking about the offensive takeaways in a moment, and I'll just kind of lead right into that. That was one of the things I was encouraged by is the tackle play. I thought that Seattle did a nice job with their tackles of being able to allow their quarterbacks a little bit of time to step up in the pocket, and we saw some beautiful throws from the quarterbacks.
Yeah, it's just a really difficult situation for pass rushers to be able to wreak havoc. I thought in the first scrimmage game, though, that they really jumped out more than today. And that's a credit partially to the offensive line. It's a credit to the quarterbacks being able to get the football out quickly. And maybe it just wasn't the best day for the entire defense. But certainly for players like Marquise Blair, they stood out. Those were the stars of today's session. When we come back for the third quarter, we're going to flip gears to the offense. A lot of quarterback discussion. Carlos Hyde, a player that certainly had a really nice game today, and much more. We'll be sharing our offensive observations from the mock scrimmage at CenturyLink Field. Don't go away. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Crushing it at work or attempting to beat that impossible boss level on the latest video game? Even in these uncertain times, everyone has to eat. So why not take advantage of DoorDash to get takeout from your favorite restaurant? If I'm craving pizza, which is basically every day, and my girlfriend is craving sushi, there's something for both of us on DoorDash. Ordering is quick and easy with the DoorDash app, allowing you to support your favorite restaurants safely. With over 300,000 partners in the US, Canada, and Australia, you can support your local go-tos or your favorite national restaurants like Papa Murphy's and the Cheesecake Factory. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter code LOCKEDON. That's $5 off and zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter code LOCKEDON. Don't forget, that's code LOCKEDON for $5 off your first order with DoorDash.
Welcome back. Glad to have you joining us here on our Wednesday episode of Locked On Seahawks. I'm your host, Corbin Smith. Joining me as always, Rob Rang. We talked defensive takeaways from today's second mock scrimmage in the second quarter. Now let's switch gears to the offensive side of the football. And this shouldn't be a surprise to our listeners, Rob, but that Russell Wilson character is pretty darn good.
Number three is fantastic. And the funny thing is that his statistic looked great. 11 of 16, two touchdowns. He had, I mean, in both the touchdowns were just, I mean, gorgeous. I mean, one to DK Metcalf, one to the tight end, Jacob Hollister. Both of them were just, couldn't have been thrown any better. And I mention that because there was actually a couple of different times where I thought that he wasn't quite as accurate as he had been. Forced some of his receivers to make some terrific catches. But the thing is in most cases they did. Tyler Lockett had one where he had to kind of reach behind his body and make an incredible catch. But the one that got me the most excited, I should mention David Moore is another good one as well. But the one that got me excited was Greg Olsen. I mean, he made a terrific catch where the ball was way behind him and just showed the flexibility to be able to contort in space and pluck it in like it was nothing. It's the rapport that we're seeing between Russell Wilson with and Greg Olsen as well has just been really, really impressive. And one of the reasons, again, that I think that number three is about to leap up the charts as far as being the MVP kind of caliber player that those of us who are paying attention have known he's been for the last couple of years.
Yeah, that throw from Russell Wilson, DK Metcalf, that was my play of the day. Pete Carroll had a different one in mind when he talked to the media after the game, but I felt really bad for cornerback Lyndon Stevens on that play because he is a smaller corner to begin with playing on the outside, but I thought he had pretty darn good coverage on Metcalf. And the problem is Metcalf with that blazing speed at 6'4",
228 pounds. That's just a mismatch. And no matter where he's at position-wise, Stevens is not going to be able to make a play on that. And then you add in the fact that Russell Wilson perfectly led Metcalf towards the corner of the end zone on that throw. Absolutely no chance for Stevens. So sometimes you just got to take your hat off and say, hey, you beat me that time. And that's going to happen to a lot of corners with DK Metcalf. A couple other throws that Wilson made were really impressive too. Down the seam, hitting Jacob Hollister for a touchdown. That is a play that I think you're going to see a lot of this year, especially with adding Greg Olsen to the mix, bringing Will Disley back. Those tight ends are going to be featured there, and defenses are going to have a tough time defending that when you've got to worry about Metcalf and Lockett and when they get Philip Dorsett back. The other quarterbacks today didn't get to see much of Geno Smith. I think after how he played in the first scrimmage, went perfect 8 for 8, they've seen enough with Geno. They know what he's going to bring them as their backup quarterback, but they wanted to get a close look at their other two players. Anthony Gordon has looked pretty good in practice. I can't say that today was one of his finer hours, though. 5 for 10, 2 interceptions. He threw both the picks to Marquise Blair, really forced the second throw. And really, Marquise Blair and Shaquille Griffin ran the route for him. It was about as easy of an interception as you're going to get in the NFL. So the undrafted rookie is having some issues adjusting. And then Danny Etling, we finally got to see him play for the Seahawks today. He's been just trying to figure out the playbook at practice. Only been with the team for a little under a week. Got him out on the field today. He went 4 for 8, and he threw a touchdown. I thought he looked kind of shaky at the beginning, but you saw the athleticism that he brings to the table, a player that played some receiver with New England when he first came into the league, and he made maybe one of the best throws of the day. This is the one that Pete Carroll said was his play of the day, but he threw a bullet to Aaron Fuller for a score towards the end of the scrimmage. And both those guys looked really good today. So I wanted to give a shout out to Etling, because he definitely outplayed Anthony Gordon this afternoon, even though he's only been with the team for a few days.
Yeah, if we were basing all of our evaluation just on this one game, then I think that Danny Etling jumped ahead of Anthony Gordon. Now, that said, of course, we're not basing everything off of one game. But certainly Danny Etling had a nice game. He was only 4 for 8 statistically. But the decision making that he showed, scrambling out of traffic a couple of times, getting what he could, throwing balls out of bounds rather than taking a potential sack. Some of the things that just showed that he was a little bit more comfortable, I think, in the environment, in the situation, than an undrafted rookie like Anthony Gordon, who started just one season at the Division I level. To me, that's as to be expected. There certainly were some things that were encouraging, in my opinion, about what we saw from the young quarterback. But at the same time, it was the same things I had seen on tape. I really like his quick release, but at the same time, I just wonder if he has the arm strength. I wonder if he has the moxie that you want, especially in an offense that's built around a dual threat quarterback like the Seahawks currently have with Russell Wilson. And that, to me, was one of the encouraging things about Etling. And, I knew that based on his LSU tape that he could move around a little bit better than people might think. And you certainly knew that, having coached against him all those years ago. I think that's one of the things that we saw Etling show that. And so that's obviously an exciting bit of news here, just because the Seahawks do have an MVP quarterback. They do have a quality backup quarterback. But in this era, you definitely want to have as many people who can throw the football as possible.
Yeah, I was thinking about this last week when they claimed Etling. I kind of wondered initially, why are they putting a claim in on a quarterback when they've already got three? But in the COVID-19 era, you want to make sure that you have some extra insurance at the most important position on the field. And Etling does bring a little bit of dual threat capability that you're not necessarily going to get from Anthony Gordon at this point. And Gordon, being an undrafted rookie, he's probably a guy you want to get on the practice squad and continue to develop. You really don't necessarily want him, given circumstances, not having OTAs and mini camps, to be on your roster unless you absolutely have to. Danny Etling, at least, has played in some preseason games against other competition. He's been in the league for a few years. He started at Purdue and LSU. So a pretty experienced player, a lot more starts under his belt at the college level than Gordon has. And quite frankly, he's just a better athlete. He's more of a threat to use his legs, and we got to see that a few times today. Now, speaking of running the football, Carlos Hyde, Brian Schottenheimer talked about this yesterday. He was talking about DJ Dallas and Travis Homer, and then he said, look, I've got to talk some about Carlos Hyde because he was so fired up to be able to get him, bring him into the fold, and especially with Chris Carson, who did come back today, just did not participate in the scrimmage. He is supposed to be back at practice on Friday. With him missing most of training camp, Carlos Hyde has been that lead dog, and I'll admit the first week or so of practice, he didn't have any splash plays that really jumped out, but I think on offense, you can make an argument away from Russell Wilson. He might have been the best player today on the field. He had a couple really nice runs in the first drive. Then he churned out a 20-plus yard run in their second drive, running with power, very decisive with his cuts. Whenever the opening's there, he wasn't missing it. He was hitting it hard, and he's getting downfield. And you could see how this guy ran for over 1,000 yards last year for the Texans. And that's your backup running back? It's an incredible addition to this backfield.
It is. And now, again, like I always go back to what players were like when they were leaving college. And of course, with this back and Hyde, we're talking about a guy that, at Ohio State, a program, of course, that just churns out NFL prospects all day long. He was a superstar there, but he was a downhill runner. And so that's kind of what I was expecting. But you mentioned his decisive cuts, and it was the vision at the second level that really I was excited about, because there were a couple of times where I thought that he was going to run, one direction. Instead, he cut and cut back against the grain. There's not many 230 pounders who have the juice to be able to pull those kind of maneuvers off. And yet he did and had several splash runs. This wasn't just one easy run. So a very encouraging performance by Carlos Hyde. You mentioned DJ Dallas as well. I thought he had a couple of terrific, at least one terrific reception and a couple of really nice runs. And I thought, okay, well, I guess it's DJ Dallas is kind of taking over and really pushing Travis Homer. And I thought that Travis Homer, while maybe not quite as effective as a runner early in this game, I thought that he had the most impressive kick return for the Seahawks in this game. So, of course, the Seahawks want Chris Carson back on the field and be their starter. But it's kind of like we talked about defensive backs and linebackers. The depth is just so good. That's one of the things that makes it exciting.
I mentioned Jacob Hollister earlier with that touchdown reception. We've talked time and time again about the depth and the talent in that tight end group. I just got to give another shout out to Greg Olsen, though. You and I both kind of looked at each other in the press box after this play. It was I guess they would call it a skinny corner route if you really wanted to call have a route name for it. But he basically, Greg Olsen, was just feeling out the defense, and he found a soft spot going outside a little bit, and he picked up over 20 yards in this reception. Just how fluid of a runner he is, and seeing his football IQ. And that's not something that you and I mean, we've known for a long time. Greg Olsen's one of the smartest guys out there when it comes to football acumen, but his ability to just figure out where that soft spot was at in the zone, gets open, wide open. Russell Wilson nails him, and he turns up field, picks up a few yards. He had a really nice reception in the first mock scrimmage game where he showed off his wheels. You don't see very many tight ends in this league that can do that, especially when they're 35 years old. So I just can't say enough about what he's adding to this offense. And when you have him, DK Metcalf, and Tyler Lockett, they're all firing on all cylinders. When you have all those players going, and then Jacob Hollister is your number three tight end, and you can bring him in and he can burn you down the seam, there are just so many weapons. It's going to be extremely difficult for opposing defensive coordinators to be able to use bracket coverage against either one of those top receivers. And Russell Wilson's got to be licking his lips about that, because you go one-on-one with DK Metcalf or Tyler Lockett, he's going to win those matchups 75-80% of the time minimum.
Well, exactly. I mean, just because Russell Wilson is as accurate as he is, and then Greg Olsen, with you mentioned his football acumen. I mean, just it's one thing to be able to articulate it, but to do it on the field and just react. We were talking about Marquise Blair and just how much more familiar, how much more comfortable he looks. I mean, Greg Olsen is like the natural. I mean, it's like Robert Redford out there running around. I mean, it's just it just looks like the game comes so easy to him because he's making those adjustments in mid-step. There is no thinking about it. And since we are giving out some kudos, and we've talked so much about the positional depth at tight end, Tyler Mabry, the undrafted free agent in Maryland, yes. You know, I mean, I've watched a bunch of the practices on TV, of course, as well. And I think it was Dave Wyman who actually mentioned that Mabry had been somebody that he had seen and thought made some splashy plays. And I don't know if that's what he had seen or his sources, you know, early on in training camp. But Mabry made one of the more athletic plays, I thought, of the entire scrimmage. Made a nice catch and then had a soaring leap up over, I believe it was Quandre Diggs. Want to see how it's better, more reliable open field tacklers. And I mean, I don't know what Mabry's vertical was off the top of my head, but it looked like it was all of 35 plus on that particular play. And, you know, we're talking about a guy who I think has a very outside chance at making this roster, but that's just the type of talent that Seattle has. And considering how accurate your quarterback is, it's one of the reasons why I think that this offense is ready to absolutely explode.
Greg Olsen talked to the media about this yesterday, that we're going six players deep at practice, and that was including Tyler Mabry. He name-dropped him a couple times, and I will admit there have been some splashy plays where you've seen his athleticism, and he's a guy that you can line up as an H-back. You can move him out a little bit in the slot. He can play that traditional tight end position a little bit. So he's a player that I don't see any way, unless there's just a rash of injuries, that he's going to be making this football team. But certainly he has shown enough in practice and in these couple of mock scrimmage games that – you're going to want to hang on to him on the practice squad if you can. So certainly a player that showed off his athleticism there. And I believe it was Quandre Diggs that he leaped over. And that's a really good defensive player for the Seahawks. So that's something that kind of drew some awes in the press box from media members. Real quick on the offensive line, no major takeaways aside from the fact that Brandon Schell exited early from this mock scrimmage. He was limping off the field from the sideline, and you and I were both looking at it like, uh-oh, that's not good, because they don't have much depth of the tackle positions anyway. Cedric Oboye, he's been playing both left and right tackle, so that's been something that's kind of been a development where they, you know, we can put him in for some snaps, but they've been very happy with what they've seen from Brandon Schell so far. And all Pete Carroll could offer up after the game is that he sprained his ankle. We don't know if it's a low ankle sprain, a high ankle sprain. We don't know the severity. Like he said, we've got to figure this out. If he misses extensive time with the lack of depth they have at that position, this is an injury that is certainly worth watching.
It is an injury worth watching. And, you know, fortunately, from what I was able to see, Brandon Schell did walk off under his own power into the tunnel. You know, and Cedric Oboye, we've talked about it before, has been, in my opinion, one of the kind of pleasant surprises of camp so far. And he took over at that right tackle position. Dwayne Brown, of course, being the stalwart that he has always been at the left tackle position for the Seahawks. But after that, you're talking about players like Jamarco Jones, like Chad Wheeler, and so not as much, you know, experience, certainly not as much, you know, camaraderie and rapport already established with the offensive lines, considering you have so many new stars already. So that is definitely the one thing that I think that to come out of this game that bears watching is you need to have your starting right tackle Brandon Schell be on the field starting week one if you can expect to be as productive as Seattle's look like their offense could be so far.
And this is a unit that's already going to have a number of new starters, and he's one of them, but he at least has started 40 games in the NFL. Cedric Oboye, he has started a handful of games too when he played for the Bengals earlier in his career, but Schell certainly has more game experience, and he's, from a body type standpoint, more in line with what the Seahawks want at that right tackle position. So that would certainly be a big injury if he's going to miss any significant amount of time. They're hoping that it's not a severe ankle sprain. That's something we should find out more about when the Seahawks return to practice on Friday. Make sure to follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. You can follow Rob at Rob Rang. Subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, whatever your preferred podcast platform is, by going to our website, LockedOnSeahawks.com. Now that we have both mock scrimmages under our belt, coming up on our Thursday show, you and I are going to be dishing out our latest 53-man roster projections. I know my team is going to look a little bit different than the one that I came up with before training camp started. Really looking forward to discussing which players we picked to make the team. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. Go Hawks.